Hey, good morning, everybody. How you guys doing today? Good. If we haven't had a chance to meet yet, if this is your first time here, my name is Sten. I'm the lead pastor here. I said it once to start, and I'll say it again. It is awesome to have you here. We really do know that there's plenty going on, and so we're thrilled to have you here with us. Super exciting for us to see this room come together like this every Sunday morning. We're in the third week of a series called Love Like Jesus, so I'm glad you could be here for that. Quick recap here. Week one, we said very simply, if we want to love like Jesus, we have to learn to do something. We have to learn to speak truth and grace like Jesus did, and we saw him do that in the midst of having a real hard conversation with someone, and it taught us how we need to really be able to do that ourselves, to speak full grace and full truth with people in our lives. Week two, just last week, we learned that if we want to love like Jesus, we have to serve people like Jesus did, primarily with an attitude that says, I can do that. Right, we learned that serving is not just an action, but that it's an attitude that says, I can do that. We have tons of people at this church who have said, I can do that in their homes, in this community, and at this church. Even they've looked around at the needs here and said, I can do that. And let me just say, it is awesome to be around people, whether it's in the community or whether it's here or elsewhere. It is awesome to be around people who look around and say, I can do that. Awesome to be around people like that. Today, we're going to take another very close look at another major part of Jesus' life, at a part of his ministry. And what we learn, I really do think it could be. What we learned today, I think really could be for someone a game changer this morning. I think for someone here today, today's message could be one of those moments where you look back and you say, that's the moment that it changed for me. That's the moment that everything changed. That's the moment when I turned a corner. That's when things got better. I really do believe for someone here today, this message, what we want to talk about today, could be a game changer for you. So I'm really glad you're here. You guys ready to dive into week three? Love like Jesus? Great. Let me just ask you this. There we go. Some excitement. I can handle that. Let me ask you this, just as a quick way to get us rolling here. You ever get sucked into stupid videos on Facebook? Anybody? Just a quick show of hands. Okay. I really hate to admit that this is true, but I get sucked into these videos all the time. It's always like the little magic tricks ones, or the one that I really hate, but I watch all the time, is the guy who's saying, hey, I can read your mind, and if I do, like and share my page. You've seen this one. He says, pick a number, subtract your age, add two, divide by four, blah, 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 that I guess your number. You've seen these things? They're so dumb. And I watch them every time. Every stinking time I get sucked in. And I know they're little sleight of hands. I know they're dumb. I know why they're doing it. They're just trying to get traffic and get likes and get people on their pages. I know why they do this. But every time I watch these stupid videos, I always end up asking myself at the end, I know it's dumb, but I always end up asking myself, how do they do that? Like how did he do that? I don't want to watch that video ever again, right? I know it's just some little formula he's got, but I'm going, how did he do that? I think that when you and I encounter people who do interesting things, do unique things, I think that's the question we want to know. How do they do that? How do they do that? And I think when you and I encounter people who are doing significant things and people who are doing extraordinary things, I hope this is the very same question that we are asking. How did she do that? How did he do that? I hope that's the question that we're asking when we see people, when we encounter people, when we read about people doing incredible things. I hope we're asking, how did he do that? Because when we get this answer, how, when that starts to make sense to us, then I think it means we can start to do the same things in our lives. And so here's the thing. This is the very question that I want to frame our morning. This question, how did he do that? How does he do that? This is the question that I want to frame our morning, except I want to ask us very specifically, how does Jesus do that? How does he do that? So we know why Jesus came. We know why he came to this world. In some ways, the first 2 weeks of our series, we got at that. He came to offer forgiveness of sins for all people. He came to serve people. He came to be an example for people to follow. I read this verse last week for us where Jesus essentially answers this question. Why did he come? He says, I came not to be served, but to serve. I came to give my life as a ransom for many. That's why he came. But what about how? What about how did he come? How did he go about doing what he did? That's the question that I want to help us find an answer to this morning, because I think how he went about his life, I think it might be actually for us how we want to go about our life too. And so I want to figure out the answer to that question. So if you would, if you have a Bible, grab it right now or just turn to the side screens. We're going to, in just a second here, we're going to look at Luke chapter 7, where I think Luke, in some ways, he answers this question for us. We might be surprised. I think some of us might be surprised to read about, to think about how Jesus came, how he did what he did. And the truth is, so were people living in Jesus's day. They were surprised about how he came. He came in a way that people simply were not expecting. In fact, take a look at this. This is Luke chapter 7, verse 18. It says this. It says, John's disciples, this is John the Baptist, pretty prominent dude, speaking about Jesus, telling about the one who is to come. They were expecting someone great. So this is John the Baptist. It says, John's disciples told him about all these things, right? All these things were just a big list of things that Jesus had been up to. And so calling two of them, John sent them to the Lord, that's Jesus, to ask them, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? They weren't sure. They weren't sure, right, that God's people were promised a Messiah. They knew someone was to come, right, that John had been talking about, hey, someone greater than I, he's coming, he's on the way. They were promised the Messiah, and he came. He showed up into the world, just not how people thought he would. So they're going like, hey, go find out. Are you the one, or should we be expecting else? That they were expecting a bunch of pomp and circumstance fitting for their understanding, for their view of a Messiah, right? For the Prince of Peace, for the King of Kings, for the Son of God. That they were expecting something else, something more. But that's not how he went about doing his business. Which brings us to this question. Well, how did he do it then? How did he come? Let's skip down to verse 34. Look what Luke writes here. He says, the Son of Man, that's Jesus, the Son of Man came eating and drinking. How did he come? He came eating and drinking. Why did he come? To forgive sins, to be a servant, to be an example for many. But how did he come? He came simply eating and drinking. So much that he's actually accused by so many people. People that are curious about Jesus or kind of wonder what he's up to. He's accused by some of being a glutton and being a drunkard. Why? Because he came eating and drinking with other people, right? This is not what they expected. They expected spiritual flair and religious extravagance, but Jesus simply came to people, came to this world, eating and drinking. The book of Luke, actually, Luke's recording of these days, it contains 10 occasions. In just the book of Luke alone, it contains 10 occasions where Jesus is eating meals with other people. 8 times where the meal is actually referenced, it's actually talked about, spoken about, and then there's 2 times where the meal that he shared with other people is just more so implied. Based on what they were doing, where they were doing it, and the other details around it, the meal that they shared together was implied. 10 times throughout this book of Luke, right, it's recorded that Jesus is eating and drinking. He's spending time around the dinner table with people. This reoccurring theme, 10 times, right? 10 times total. This reoccurring theme seems important to Luke. And repetition, oftentimes in the Bible, repetition of something, it suggests that maybe, just possibly, this is something that we should pay attention to. And so I want us to pay attention to that here this morning. And as we start to look at it closely, maybe you're thinking to yourself, maybe you're thinking you got this figured out. You're going, okay, I get what you're, I see what you're getting at here, Stan. You're going, okay, week 3, if we want to, you know, love like Jesus, we have to spend more time eating meals together like Jesus did. That's not entirely what I want to get at this morning. There's a lot to be said. We even took a whole Sunday here earlier this winter. There's a lot to be said about the physical act of eating meals with people, of sitting down around the table eating meals with people. You could say that to love like Jesus, you got to, you know, eat with people like Jesus did. I think that's very great. It's, you know, awesome thing. But this morning, I want to suggest something. I want to help us see something just slightly different. I want us to suggest something actually a little more broad in a way I want to back out a little bit on this in hopes that more of us would find a handle. More of us would find a handle on this, a place to grab a hold of this in our lives. And so in order to do that, I want to help us get a better understanding about meals in Jesus's day. Perhaps not all that different than meals for us today. Meals then weren't just about food. Right? It wasn't just about this break to kind of get some nourishment for your body. Meals were really social engagements. More than that, meals were actually social statements about who you wanted to be associated with, who was at your table, who wasn't, whose table you sat at. Meals were social engagements about who you were with, right? Who were your people? And so when we look at meals in the New Testament, when we look at Jesus breaking bread with others, it really provides imagery for us, I think, of something more. I think eating and drinking, that's how we know how he came, eating and drinking. I think eating and drinking creates an image for us of fellowship, of community, and of what we might just say is being present in someone's life. Right? You don't get any more present than being in that kind of setting with someone at their table. I think this image of eating and drinking creates for us a picture, an image of what fellowship and of what community is all about and what it's like to be present in someone's life. And I think that's how Jesus came to people. Jesus does so many. We've looked at it. There's countless other stories we could look at, but Jesus does remarkable, uncanny, unbelievable things in people's lives because he is what? He is present in people's lives, demonstrated over and over and over again with the image of Jesus in people's homes and at their dinner table. It's fellowship, it's community, it's a picture of being present with someone. And it's how he does what he does. And it's the example that I think that he sets for us. And truthfully, the very first followers of Jesus, they picked up right where he left off, right? He's present with people and amazing things are happening. His very first followers picked up right where he left off, and they see the same kind of results happening with them. And so in the book of Acts, which is also written by Luke, actually, in many ways, Acts is considered to be kind of like the sequel to Luke in many ways, right? So in the book of Acts, we see the greatest picture. We get a chance to read about the greatest picture of this type of community, the greatest picture of this type of fellowship and of this type of being present with one another. It's Acts chapter 2, 42 to 47. I want to read it for you here. Take a look with me. It says this. This is the very first followers of Jesus. And here's what it said they did, picking up after Jesus's example. It says this. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to what? Fellowship. To the breaking of bread and to prayer. And everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together, and they're present with one another, and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. And every day they continued to meet, what? Together in the temple courts. And they broke bread in their homes, and they ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. Some translations say the goodwill of all the people. I like that. And then it says this, and the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. This is quite possibly the Bible's most famous, most inspiring picture of community. The most famous, most inspiring picture of this kind of fellowship and this kind of picture of people who were present in the lives of each other. And it's not just that they did things together, right? I kept emphasizing that, and they met together, and they ate in homes together. It's not just that they did things together, but what makes it so great is that God did great things among them when they were together. Lives were changed. Nobody went without. Needs were met. People were drawn to them. They enjoyed the favor and the goodwill of all the people. And every day, more and more people were saved. More and more people were drawn to this group of people who were meeting together. Incredible things happening. Lives changed. The group growing. It's powerful stuff. Powerful stuff that we see in quite possibly this most famous picture of fellowship and of community and being present with one another. Powerful stuff. And so here's what I want to tell you today. Here's what I want to suggest for you and for me, that there is power in being present. Right? In our lives, in the worlds that we're a part of, in the communities that we're part of, there is power in being present, in showing up, in being all there, in being all in being together. Right? We see it in the life of Jesus. We see the incredible things that he does when he shows up in people's lives, and we see it in the lives in the life of his very first followers. We see it in the lives of the very first followers and the very first churches that ever started to form. Or we see the incredible things that are done when these people show up together. There is power in being present. And so with this as the backdrop for us of how Jesus lived his life and how he urged others to live their life, what I want to do this morning is I want to share just a few thoughts about the power of being present for you and for me. First thought is this: there is power in being present at home. I know that I talk a lot about kind of life at home for us here every Sunday. I seem to say something about life at home, but here's what I believe, that so many of us are waiting and wishing and hoping and wanting for big things to happen, right? We want to be a part of big things. We want to change the world. I think the best way that we can start to change the world, I think the best way that we can start to see change in our own lives is by showing up in our own homes. There's power in being present at home. And if I could just take a second here, really quickly, I want to speak to the men in the room, just for a second, right? That this is true for all of us. There's power in being present at home. But if I could take a second and just speak to the men in the room, it's dads, it's husbands, it's future dads, it's future husbands. Gentlemen, there is power in your presence at home. There is power in your presence at home. I know that's where you live. I know that's where you eat. I know that's where you sleep. I know that's where you come home to at the end of the day. I know that's where you spend a ton of your time. So you're going, what do you mean? Am I present at home? I know that is home for you. I know that's where you spend your time. But what I want to ask you this morning is, are you present there? Are you all in there? And I'm not shaking my head at anybody. I'm not trying to come down on anybody. I'm not trying to point the finger at anyone here this morning, because if I'm going to do that, in some ways, I got to start with me, right? Because I know how hard it is. I know firsthand, and I hate to admit this is true, but I know how hard it is, and I know firsthand how tough it can be to be present at home. On more than one occasion, this is just the truth of how things go for me. On more than one occasion, when I'm at home, I will be lost in church planting la-la land, okay? It's a dangerous land to get lost in sometimes, okay? But that's sometimes where I'm lost, in this church planting la-la land. And in the background of the house is this incessant noise. It's an incessant noise, but it's actually chatter of my kids, mostly my little son. The kid does not stop talking. And in just this, I'm lost in church planting la-la land, but just in the smallest part of my brain, just in the back corner, I can pick up on the noise, the same thing over and over and over again that's coming out of his mouth. I can't exactly pick it out. I mean, it's just like a broken record. It doesn't stop. I can't actually make out what he's saying, but I can pick up on the fact that it's there, and it's the same noise, and it's the same thing coming out of his mouth over and over again, and it doesn't stop. And eventually, Erica will call out to me, get my attention. She'll say, "Sten." And I snap to. And she says, "He's talking to you." And my focus shifts to my little guy, right? And then all of a sudden, that sound, it comes in to focus. Same sound. "Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad. Look at this. Hey, Dad. Can I show you this? Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad. Hey, Dad." I can't depend on my wife to get my attention every time one of my kids is trying to get their dad's attention. Gentlemen, our wives and our kids and our families, they need us to be present in our homes. And the truth is, I'm not in the same line of work as most of you. So I get that. Maybe you're saying, hey, Stan, you don't get, you know what it is that I'm doing. No, I'm not in the same line of work as you, but I know what it's like to have work on the mind, right? Starting a church, planting a church from scratch, from nothing, right? Hoping that there's butts in the seats, hoping that there's another family that comes, another group of people that you can connect with, right? Starting a church from scratch means there is always, 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 always an email for me to write, a text to respond to, a family to follow up with, a fire to put out, a lead to follow up on, someone else to check in with. Doesn't stop. And for the most part, again, you know, life as a pastor, time's all over the place, but for the most part, that there are parts of my day that are designated to do those things. And for the most part, there are parts of your day that are designated to do the things that you gotta do. And so again, I'm just taking a second to talk to the dads, to husbands, future dads, future husbands, right? Put down the phone. When you're home, close the laptop, check the stocks later, right? Follow up on the sales call in the morning. Turn off ESPN. Quit, you know, trying to sneak a score underneath the dinner table. I've been there. I've done that. Okay? There's time for that stuff later. So when you pull into the driveway, tell yourself this. Every time, every day, when you pull into the driveway, tell yourself, my second shift is just about to start, because this day ain't over yet. You remind yourself every time, okay? Second shift is just about to start. I'm working the night shift today. You tell yourself, I'm working the night shift, and you remind yourself that that's the most important shift of your day. And so you can't lose sight of it. You can't forget it, right? There is power in your presence at home. That's true for every one of us here today. It's not just men. I just want to take a second to talk to the men in the room. But that's true for every one of us here today. There is power in your presence at home. Here's the second thought I want to share this morning. There is power in your presence at church. There's power in your presence in the local church, whether that's here or whether that's a church that you're a part of. There's power in your presence at church. And before I go on sharing these things, let me just be real honest here. That what I'm about to say, or just some of the things that I want to talk about, I'm just being really honest. What I want to say makes me really nervous this morning. Because we're only like 7 months in to being a church, and I just want to say things and preach things that make you like me and love me and like Mid-Current Church and just think this is the best church in the whole world. And that's still the case now. But what I want to say today is maybe possibly one of the more challenging things that I've ever said or just kind of brought up, right? But and really, we're only 7 months in, so we don't have a ton of history together. So maybe a lot of this is just influenced too by my history in church in general. But what I want to say, I'm nervous to say it, I'm being honest here, right? But what I'm about to say is maybe one of the tougher things that I'd ever said here before, but I wish so badly, this is the truth, I'm nervous to say it, but I wish so badly that I could just like pull back the curtain. I wish you could see my heart. I wish you could, know that my heart, in my heart, I just simply want what is best for you. And so that's why I want to talk about it, and that's the honest truth. So here's what I want to say and just bring up and just kind of put on your radar. But the power of your presence in church. Statistics today, they show that the average committed Christian in America, this is just kind of American statistics, the average committed Christian in America now goes to church one out of four Sundays a month. One out of four Sundays a month. To be honest, it's something that pastors are, trying to figure out together. They're talking about, they're scratching their head. What about for you? What about for me? Yeah, okay. Trying to figure this out. I heard one pastor say this to his church, and in some ways I'd say the same thing. He's kind of sharing these statistics, and he said, I don't know what to do with that. And in a lot of ways, that's what I'd say. I don't know what to do with that. One out of four. I don't know what to do with that, because let me be super, super clear. I don't know what to do with that, because I am not in any way at all telling you to stop going on vacation. I'm not saying that, because you better believe I'm going to take my vacation when the time comes, right? I'm not saying that. I'm not telling you to pull your kids out of every sport or every activity that they enjoy. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that, you got to quit your job if it doesn't line up for you. I'm not saying that at all. If I'm being really honest, I don't know what I'm saying. Okay, this is like the most non-specific piece of teaching I've ever, that you'll ever hear in the church. I'm not saying you're a horrible person. I'm not saying you're going to hell. I'm not saying you're the worst Christian ever. I just want you to know, I just want to like put it on your radar. I want to remind you that there is power in your presence in the local church. And I guess maybe this is really what I want to say or what I want to just suggest or what I want to put on your radar, just as a caution, maybe as a warning. My real fear is this, that maybe this is what I want to say, right? That if you always trump church with something else, right? If this is kind of a habit, or you often trump church with something else, you're going, oh, the weather's bad, well, I'll sleep in, or the weather's nice, I'll go have some fun. You know, or you're going, hey, we got home late, or hey, the game's on. If you find that you often trump church with something else and you never trump something else with church, don't be surprised if your kids grow up and they don't value community and they don't see church as a priority and they walk away from Jesus. Not saying you got to be here 4 out of 4. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you don't ever trump something else with church, I worry about the message that we send. I heard one pastor put it like this, and maybe I'd try to end this spot on a little, happier picture. A pastor put it like this. He said, imagine your family waiting for the latest Netflix movie to be released, right? You've planned to watch it Friday night, first day it's released, and you can't wait. And so the whole family comes home to watch the latest Netflix video. And then dad goes upstairs to watch in his room, right? He likes the TV in there. Mom watches on the couch, right? Because the TV's the biggest. Johnny goes into the kitchen, watches on his iPhone with the earbuds in his ears. Mary goes up into her room to watch on the iPad, and Jack goes down in the basement to watch on his laptop. You'd never do that. It's crazy, right? You'd never do something so important like that, right? Why? Because the best things that you do are the best because you do them with people that you care about. And the same goes for church, right? There's something powerful that happens when we make a commitment to being in the presence of God together. When we make a commitment to be in together, to worship together, to sing together, to drink coffee together, to sit together, to enjoy the favor and the goodwill of people together, right? God's honored, hearts are encouraged, needs are met. People look in from the outside going, hey, man, I want to be a part of that. I'm not telling you, you got to be at church 100% of the time, otherwise you got trouble. That's not what I'm saying. I just want you to know that whether it's here, whether it's some other church that you're a part of, I want you to know there is power in your presence at church. Okay, here's a final thought. There's power in your presence in a committed community. Maybe you call it a small group. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. There is power in your presence in a committed community of friends. It's ongoing. It's a committed group of people that you do your life with. Okay, Eric and I, we've bounced around a lot in our life together, in our 10 years of marriage and 15 years of knowing each other. But one of the places we have the deepest roots, one of the places we've spent the most time together is in Chicago. And it was early in our marriage that all of a sudden we invited our kind of closest friends at the time into kind of a small group, if that's what you want to call it. We kind of invited them intentionally into our lives. Having these friends was great, but we wanted something kind of more than that, right? We spent time together when, we had free time, and that was all good. But in addition to just doing these things, we said, hey, we want to be intentional about doing some stuff together. And so we came together to meet once a week. And let me just say, I'm not sure that I'm the man that I am. I'm not sure that my marriage is as strong as it is without this group of people, without this committed group of people in my life. And I think these people would say the same thing. They're still a part of my life now. Many of us haven't lived in the same place in forever, but the same thing goes, right? My friend Pete, best friend Pete, he moved to Stockholm, Sweden. I was like the saddest dude around. Pete moves halfway across the country. You might be thinking, okay, friendship over, you guys are done. I get texts and calls from this funky number. It's like 1-24-55-45-255-67. I'm going, it's Pete. He's calling me from Stockholm, Sweden. And he's like, hey, Stan, I've been thinking about you, man. I'm excited to hear how church is going, dude. Man, I've been praying for you. I can't wait to catch up. I hope you're doing well, man. I don't know what I'd do in my life without Pete. I don't know what we all would have done without each other, without a group of friends that were committed to each other. I do not know what that group of people would have done without each other. It was a group of friends that celebrated together, and it was a group of friends that cried together. We celebrated engagements. We celebrated new jobs. We celebrated promotions. We celebrated growing families. Pete's daughter was born 8 days after my daughter, and then the next couple's son was born 1 month after that. Celebrated together, and we also cried together, right? When anxiety and depression set in for someone, when fear and doubt were crippling for someone at the moment, when health was in jeopardy for some, sickness was kind of lurking on the sidelines, we cried together. And on more than one occasion, someone would be sharing something. We're just doing life together. We're present with one another. On more than one occasion, someone would be sharing something, and then someone else in the group would just say, hey, time out, stop. Can we pray for you? And FYI, more than often, it wasn't me. I'm like sleeping on the job. You don't have to be a pastor to do this kind of stuff. More often than not, it was someone else in the group going, hey, time out, can we pray for you right now? And so we would. And the truth is, I'm not a whole hands, sing kumbaya kind of guy. So if that's you, I get it, right? It's not me. But these were some of the most powerful prayers that I've ever been a part of. Right there in the middle of our like floral-walled, shaggy brown carpeted 1960s apartment in Chicago, right? We're going, hey, you're getting in the middle, right? And we'd circle up and we'd surround them. And one of us would say, hey, could we put our hands on you? I mean, we just want to let you know that we're here. We just want you to know. We just want you to feel that we are in your corner. And so we'd pray. I don't know how common it is that people have that type of committed community of friends in their life. I don't know if it's that common that people have that anymore. Do you? If you have, here's what I'm going to say. If you have that, three things. If you have that, hold on to it for dear life, through thick and thin, right? And then there is thick and thin, right? There were every Wednesday nights where I was ready for this crew to leave my house. You better believe it, right? Were there days where we like got on each other's nerves throughout the week? Yeah, right? If you got it, you hold on to it through thick and thin. Number two, if you're kind of on the edge of that, you're going, maybe I kind of do, I think so, maybe. If you're on the edge of that, jump into it. Right? Don't wait any longer, right? Jump into it and organize your life around it. Pattern the way that you do life around those kind of people. And then number three, if you don't totally have that right now, find it fast. Find it as fast as you can and jump in with both feet. And honestly, we at Midcurrent Church here, we want to help. We want to do what we can by helping getting you into smaller sized groups of people. We've done it before, we're gonna do it again, and we're gonna keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it until more of us have this type of committed community of people in our lives. We're gonna keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it until that's true for more of us who call Midcurrent Church home. And just a side note here, right? Full disclosure, this is just a shameless plug, right? If you're thinking about that, if you're thinking about like how a church would organize that kind of, small group life together, if you're thinking about how that would happen, how that comes together, and you're telling yourself, I can do that, come talk to me. Because I got a job for you. To help more and more people here have a committed community of friends, of people in their life. I got a job for you. If you're saying, hey, I can do that, come talk to me, okay? Shameless plug, okay? That's all I'll say about that. Folks, there is power in your presence. Power in your presence at home. There's power in your presence in the local church, and there's power in your presence and the presence of other people in your life in a committed community of friends. Why did Jesus come? To forgive sins, to set us free, to serve others, to be an example for others. That's why he came. How did he come? Not with spiritual pomp and circumstance, not with, you know, religious extravagance, not with flowery prayers and guided group meditations and, you know, spiritual practices. No, he came eating and drinking. He showed up in people's lives. He was present in people's lives. And I hope the same thing could be said of you and of me too. That's my hope and that's my prayer. Let me pray for us this morning. God, we thank you for your son, Jesus, for so many different reasons. He is the example for our life, for how to love people, for how to engage this world. He's the example, God. And so we give you thanks for him. We give you thanks for his life. We give you thanks for the reasons why he came, because we needed that, God. We needed forgiveness of sins. We needed someone to set the example for how we serve other people. So God, we thank you for that. And we also thank you for the model that he is, God, and how we go about living our life, how we do the things that we want to do, God, how we want to see change start to happen. God, and I just pray for anybody here that wants to see change happen, change in their home, change in their family, change in their marriage. God, I pray that you would help us to see. If we want to see change happen, we just got to show up a little more. Show up in our home, show up in our families, show up in our marriage. Be present, be all in, God. Pray that we would see that reminder and that we would jump in with both feet, God. We thank you for this morning. We thank you for this chance that we have to be together. And we pray these things in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.